This is the world of Salesforce and Dropbox, HubSpot and Evernote, a world unthinkable without cloud software services. Most businesses and consumers use SaaS every day to get work done. Driven by the internet and ever-expanding availability of bandwidth, SaaS has come to dominate our lives in a very short span of time. But developing a defining service, often ahead of its time, getting users to engage, secure funding, protect IP, and building a truly remarkable and successful SaaS is not an easy task. SaaS Stories brings conversations with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead. How they built their SaaS, genesis, struggles, trials, tribulations, and eventually success.
Welcome to SaaS Stories. Thank you for your time and for joining us on this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give a shout out to each of you in our next episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Welcome to this fourth episode of SaaS Stories. Today, we have with us Rishi Kulkarni, CEO and co-founder at RevSales, an all-in-one document management system for teams which allows them to collaborate and efficiently create, review, and sign documents in one central place.
We have a conviction of what market needs to go towards or where a user experience needs to be. And here is where there is a process that we can put in place to discover a market and solve the problem. Right. So largely, it's like a combination of these two, three things, wherein a strong belief on how we can execute, conviction of what's broken and what we want to fix, and just the ability to execute it in terms of process. And that's how RevSales started. So it really didn't start with a problem statement in mind. It started with more of a process in mind. And that's where me and Sami started in 2018.
Rishi has been part of the startup ecosystem for nearly 20 years. In 2018, he got back to his entrepreneurial journey through RevSales. His first startup, OneClick, a video conferencing platform, was acquired by Freshworks. He spent the next 2 years a director of product management at Freshworks. A people person, besides managing and growing RevSales, he actively mentors young fledgling startups. It is rumored that he nurtures a green thumb and is a health and fitness enthusiast. Now, on to this surprisingly open and insightful episode with Rishi Kulkarni, CEO and co-founder at RevSales. Rishi, welcome to SaaS Stories. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on the show and generally learn of the great work you guys are doing at RevSales. Let's start with a bit of your background. How did you come to the beginning of RevSales?
Thank you for having me on your platform, Shubhanjan. It's a pleasure catching up with you. The bit of a background with RevSales is unlike many of the journeys in startup, wherein it's an idea, it's a rush of blood to the head. I want to do this. Or it's a impulsive, passionate call. RevSales was a little more planned activity. This is my second startup. I had a startup that I founded end of 2011, which got acquired by Freshdesk, Freshworks in 2015. And I met my co-founder Sameer Goyal in Freshworks. He was on the other side of the table. They were evaluating RevSales that time. OneClick that time, sorry. OneClick was my previous startup. And me and Sameer had a lot of things in common. Our headquarters were in Chennai, but Sameer and I were both doing back and forth every week between Bangalore and Chennai. We had an overlap in terms of the way our families are, just the backgrounds in terms of techie comes product comes sales kind of a background. There's just a lot of overlap, and also this particular itch that perhaps we should give it a shot for one more startup. And this happened in 2015 itself, when we used to take a train from Bangalore to Chennai. early morning, 5 o'clock, reach Chennai at 11 o'clock. And then that's 4 hours, 4.5 hours of time that you had to really ideate and talk and connect and build a relationship, build a friendship, right? And then fast forward to 2018 is when I left Freshworks. Samir had left Freshworks, and we were largely looking at is what do we do? What's the next things that we do? And that's where I'm saying is it wasn't a passionate call that is, hey, I have an idea, I have an itch, and I want to do this one. It's more about is here's our belief, here's what we believe, who we are. Here's what we have a conviction of what market needs to go towards or where a user experience needs to be. And here is where there is a process that we can put in place to discover a market and solve the problem. Right. So largely it's like a combination of these two, three things wherein a strong belief on how we can execute, conviction of what's broken and what we want to fix, and just the ability to execute it in terms of process. And that's how Red Sail started. So it really didn't start with a problem statement in mind. It started with more of a process in mind. And that's where me and Sami started in 2018.
Great. So before we continue with this story, I'll just go hop one stop back and see whether this was a pattern during One Click as well. How did that one happen?
So One Click happened because now One Click was a first time entrepreneur kind of activity, but again that too actually had a lot of things that are aligned. I was in US between 1999 to 2004, so seen the .com boom. Or the dot-com bust, boom and bust, saw the tragedy of 9/11 in 2001 there. And also around that same time, life happens, got married. My wife was completing her graduation there. But I've always worked in the startups. All those 4 years, except the first 6 months, rest of the 4 years I was working in startups, is where I learned how a team is put together, how a business plan is built, how a business is built, how a go-to-market is executed. Right? So those are the things that I really saw firsthand. Because, and sometimes it's just luck. It's just the timing. I was among the first 5 or the first 10 of the team. So it, even though I may be an engineer at that time in time, and this was 2001, 2002. Because the teams are so small, because you're working with the founders so closely, you are aware of things. You pay attention to things, right? It may not be your skill, it may not be your expertise, but it seeps into your system.
Correct.
So fast forward to 2009, I was in a startup called LifeSize Communications, which was then the Zoom of enterprises, and it got acquired by Logitech in 2009. I was an early engineer, so good things happened. It allowed me some independence in terms of financially and things like that. So I said, okay, let's build a Zoom for India. So that's when it started. And that's the passion aspect of it that kicked in that time is, hey, how can I build an enterprise-grade video conferencing for India in India? It was a journey for 4 years. Had customers, built a business, raised funds. But I think we really solved the problem more from a technology perspective than really a business model perspective. And it seemed like a right fit for Freshworks in 2015, and we got acquired then.
And how large was the acquisition in terms of money?
I think I'll give you some context there. We are even today among the handful of B2B acquisitions that has ever happened in India. So we are not an active hire, we were an acquisition. Customers, product, team, roadmap, everything got acquired. Our investors, including Bloom and HNIs, they all got a very healthy return. And it allowed me to jump for Rev Sales once again. So that's largely the context of the kind of acquisition that it was. By the way, Bloom's Arca is now an investor in RevSales. So we were an positive exit founder for them. So that of relationship course. Continued.
And how much you had raised for OneClick at that point?
$250,000.
Okay. Okay.
This was 2011 when
of course.
It was only B2C. There was no idea of B2B. Of we course. Were among the handful of founders in B2B.
Right. Fast forward to RevSales. What was the process that you were trying to sort of bring into the space? Because the space in itself is pretty crowded, right? Document management, if I take that as your space.
Absolutely. So I think if you look at time and again ideas, right? Our belief has always been is problems always remain. I want to, in a very consumerist way, I'd love to listen to the music. It used to be needle and the disc. Then it turned out to be tapes. Then it turned out to be iPods. And now it is iPhone and Spotify. So that I want to listen to the music has always been a pain point, has always been a crowded market. Yet the connection between those two keeps evolving, right? So that's always the belief that, hey, business document management system has forever been a problem. One of the biggest acquisitions in my times was a company called Documentum that IBM had bought for multi-billion dollars. Who knows about Documentum anymore? And what has that led to is a further multi-billion dollar market for Box and Dropbox and Google Docs and multiple companies. What has that led to is more and more documentation, right? So I think that it comes from that conviction largely is what doesn't go away is problems. That is, people want to have a system to get documentation. What keeps varying is the speed at which they do, the ease at which they do, the collaboration or the interaction, and perhaps some regulatory needs, some tech interaction needs, like, for example, used to do desktop, now it's mobile, then there's iPad, then there's phone. There's just so much of variation that keeps happening. So that was the idea that even if before we discovered that it's document management system, our conviction was overall software experiences, when it comes to small businesses, medium businesses, or even enterprise, experiences has still not caught up with the new age, the Instagram kind of an experience or the TikTok kind of an experience. That is, I can get things done by a bunch of clicks, by selecting a bunch of templates and being there, right? So that kind of an experience even businesses want. That has not been there, one. But to bridge between what we want to do and that there's a problem statement, we actually put in a process. And that's where I think we took a couple of months between me and Samir, where we leverage similar technology like what we are doing right now, which is Skype, but in that case, we use some other video and audio conference calls, wherein I think we did over 90 such interviews, leaders, CFOs, CTOs, sales heads, business heads, founders. And we would ask this question, hey, what are the top five problems you're talking of in your board meeting when it comes to operations? What are the top three problems you're facing when it comes to sales execution? What's keeping you up at night? And then we flip that problem to the end users themselves, salespeople, finance people, people who actually are in the sharp end of the stuff, right? They're doing things. So we called them also. And then we discovered this was a problem.
These 90 people were from which geography? Were they Indian or were they all over the world?
Our 3-4 pillar thesis was me and Samir know only software, SaaS, B2B. We did not know, we don't know how to build a TikTok. We don't know how to build a Twitter or a Flipkart. So we didn't participate in that. Because it's B2B and SaaS, US becomes the center of gravity.
That default doesn't center mean, of gravity, yeah.
Yes, default center. That doesn't mean North America, South America, UK, Australia, Europe, India, Asia is not the market. But it's just that the first point where you prove yourself the model and everything happens to be the US. So with those two, three things in mind, our bulk of those interviews, kind of calls were back in the US. Of course, there are a lot of participants in these global companies, who luckily happened to be in India. So we did interact with them too, but the focus was largely US market.
And so how did you recruit these 90 people? They were like out of your circle, or these were like unknown people you were reaching out to?
So sometimes some of the things that helps, right, is me and Samir both have been in the industry for over 20 years. Samir did his MBA from Canada. I worked in the US for 5 years. Samir worked in the US for 5 years. So you build some network, right?
Sure.
But very, very basically, we leveraged LinkedIn. We just passed employees, passed bosses, passed connects. Third was just influencers. You know that, hey, these are the kind of people who attend conferences and they are sharing the challenges. So write an email to them, leave a voicemail to them, and you'll be surprised how many of them get back to you.
Sure.
So we actually started, we didn't know that we'll reach out to 90. We actually reached out to 2 people. Hey, you know what? Just want to talk to them. And one of them said, hey, you know what? I like what you guys are trying to do and what you're going to dig into. Why don't I connect you to 4 more people? The 4 connected to 10 more, and the 10 connected to 15 more. And that's
interesting. Interesting. So just I'll go back. I want you to unpack a bit about your process idea. That, see, 2004 Box was launched, right?
Yes.
2008, they were like, they had raised money and they were like, they had redefined their focus and so on, and they were on their way to building a fairly decent company, right? Dropbox happened sort of around that time. So a lot of the technologies that you are talking of in terms of document management, the fact that it's a problem and that it needs a solution, that was already out there. Large companies with very, very definite funding. I mean, if you are probably aware, Mark Cuban was the first one who wrote a check for Box, and so on. I mean, these are known facts, nothing new. But that is true. So, what were you thinking that you would do that these guys have not put their finger on?
So we largely focused on operations. That is, what happens when it comes to getting things done within an organization, within a company, within an enterprise? And I'll give you some of the key learnings that we applied. So when we were at Freshdesk, Freshworks, Freshdesk, Freshworks belongs to the Zendesk, BMC software, a bunch of these customer support or Pegasystems, they belong to that world. And one of the key thing they solve is they take a persona, which is customer support, and they say, hey, you know what? I'm going to solve the problem for this persona, their jobs to be done, and their collaboration, right? So Box, the way it has solved is, hey, you know what? Enterprise storage is a problem. Enterprise documentation management is a problem. Let me solve that. Google Docs is Microsoft Word is a cloud, is not a cloud based service. It's a device based service. It's not available. It's not always on. So let us come with an always on service, right? So the way they attack the problem is with a different angle. The way we started looking at it is let's talk to the human beings who do their job, right? So in that case, we started looking at largely folks like sales operations. These are the people who get a proposal out. They get a quotation out. They get any contracts discussed, negotiated out. So there is, in the entire hierarchy of salespeople, there are people who generate leads. There are people who close the leads. And there are people who onboard and customer service or customer success. But there is this entire horizontal that or a vertical that next to them who keep on supporting them, right? That is, hey, which leads to go after? What's the kind of a content that you need to close this deal? Hey, where are the line mines in this particular contract, right? And that is sales operations. So that is when we started looking at, we did not find any tool which spoke to them, which connected to them. So if you look at their jobs to be done, they don't see it as document management system. They see it as jobs to be done. Hey, I want to send a proposal out pronto. Sales guy is calling me. He wants this clause payment terms. 30 days to 45 days negotiated because he's a good, it's a good big logo. I'll get it done because I'm going to talk to the manager. We have a deal review. We'll close that. So that's the kind of an approach that we went was learnings from Zendesk, Freshdesk, Intercom. Intercom, it's a chat, but the way we solved was, hey, what does a product manager need to get his product out? So they said, oh, he needs a chat, he needs a survey, he needs a landing page, he needs an analytics tool. Let's give it to them, right? So when you holistically look at the persona, then you are looking at this problem very differently. And it's this unique angle that we didn't start with. We actually reached it through the process. And that's where we felt is, hey, Google Docs isn't having this conversation. Box is definitely not having this conversation. The second nuance I want to bring in is Box is not there for a 10-team business in South Africa. Box is not there for a 5-team people in Gurgaon or Bangalore. It's going after enterprises. It's the most marquee customer it has is GE, right? So sometimes your competitors or the markets are largely addressed in a very fixed known space, and there are these gaps that open up, which customers are seeking. I want that solution, but I want this experience, right? That's where this magic happens. And that's where it comes, right? So listening to music, everybody has a problem, but the solution keeps on evolving. And we feel that we're at a stage where there's brand new solutions to be there.
Once you have figured out the angle through which, or the lens through which you're going to look at this document management space, now how do you go out to the market? What was the next step?
Oh, okay. Now this is where the operationalizing the startup kicks in, right? So basically you'll start drawing now a bunch of things that you need to execute to do these things. So number one we did was, once we spoke to a bunch of them, once we realized that, hey, here's an opportunity, here's the problem statement. If I were to share the details of the kind of questions we used to ask, it was a fairly a drilled down conversation, like what you're doing right now. Like, hey, what are you doing? What kind of challenges you run into? What excites you? What kills your day? And things like that. And some nugget comes in, and then we'll ask them, what kind of a software are you using? Whom are you collaborating to get this done? And then you'd say, I'm doing these things. But by the way, here's a gap. Then we would ask, hey, what are the alternatives to address that gap? And then you'd ask, how urgent is that? How much money are you willing to pay for that? And by the way, are you the one to decide that, or you have a higher up, or you have a peer, someone to decide that, right? So those latter set of questions were very, very important to actually decide what kind of an operations we need to run. So if he says that, hey, I don't buy these things online, you have to come to me sell, then it's a different business model, because then it's outbound sales. But you know, if he says, no, I look at G2, I look at Captera, I do Google, I try, I buy, because it's an easy to use software. Well, that's a model also, right? Second is, no, we have already alternatives. And if the alternatives are well-entrenched, very large categories, then you need some kind of a courage, right, to go after. Versus if you see, hey, you know what, there's a positioning available. You know what, there's too many of them repeating this. It's worth going after. Then what you need is, the second step is okay, here's a plan, here's a product screen. So what we did was immediately hired a designer, immediately hired one engineer on our money. Me and Samvi, we put in $25,000 each. So we had a $50,000 pool. We had a designer. And in less than 3 weeks, we had a simple mock which was interactable. Luckily, about 30-40% of the 90 people that we spoke to also said, hey, you know what? If you have something, I might give it a shot. So we sent him this mock, or her this mock. They just basically looked at it, got a sense of it. Hey, you know what? Maybe this solves a problem. You know what? If you do this, I may show up interesting like that. So we took those kind of answers, number one. Number two, went to the market, spoke to the investment community. That is, hey, here's our data. Here's what we've spoken to. Here's who me and Samir are. That is, here's the why the problem is there. Here's the who wants to solve it. And here's the now. That is, looks like an opportunity is now. Do you think you can support that? Of course, some are not going to say, some are going to say yeah, no, some are going to say, let's wait and see. Some were fairly excited in terms of, hey, you know what, I like the process. It's fairly data-oriented, it's fairly feedback-driven. in the end, all startups are startups. They carry that number of that percentage of risk. But at least there is a way I can quantify what this means. So we close a seed round. And with that seed round, we immediately built a team. And then we launched a product. And then we iterated that. So I think the number phase number one was largely customer discovery, customer development. When we got a sense of that, we immediately put our money and hired a few people to get a mock. It wasn't even MVP. There was actually nothing built. We actually had a PowerPoint slide, which has a little more screenshot that you could touch and feel and things like that. And with that data, we actually went to the market, raised the money. And it was a very small seed. It was not like go crazy kind of a thing, but it was just enough that we can take it to the next stage.
How much was it?
We raised $1.2 million in the seed. So 1.2 is what we raised. And then we built a team, put about 3 months to come up with the first version, and then we started iterating. So that's largely
great.
How from ideation to really lifting the platform up. I
mean, so from the point you finished the interviews to the point you had the first version out, in between raising the money, it's about a 6-8 month period?
Six to eight months, yes.
Yeah. So now that you have had the product out, how did you go about attacking the market? I mean, were you still focused in the US, or because you did use some African reference and all that? So I'm just wondering.
I did that. I'll give you that one. But I tell you this. So in 2019, between me and Samir, each of us spent over 160 days in the United States. Dreamforce event, Saster event, name an event, we were there. We put up a simple booth. We had a lot of face-to-face meetings. So our 2019 was primarily US focused, primarily mid-market kind of a sales motion, wherein we call it founder-led sales, because we want to see what the user is saying. We
absolutely
want to know the sales pitch before we can bring it. So that's what it was. So all the data that I'm talking about is largely 2019. So 2019 sales process was largely going to the US, doing the meetings, pitching, demoing, installing, and then coming back to India, setting up a team here which would support them in terms of onboarding, customer success, customer support, any tweaks and things like that. And also, product was still very, it takes time for a product to mature, right?
Sure.
I mean, you can't say that a baby is born in 6 months. It does take 9 months, right? So that also was the process. So 2019 was all about going to the US, engaging with prospects and customers, and truly doing the product market fit motion. That was the process.
It's time for a short break. Rishi and Samir decided to spend time in the US talking to customers in search of product market fit. They were attending events, and Jason Lemkin opened up tables at Saster 2019 for the first time. Some quirk of fate, the end of the room space became prime spot, ending in 37 demos. Rishi tells us this story right after the break. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. Right before the break, I asked how Rishi and his co-founder Samir were doing their rounds in the US. And he regales us with this story that unfolded at Saster 2019.
So were you, like, both of you were in the same event, or were you splitting yourselves and going to two different events? How was it working out?
So events, we would both be together. So I'll tell you one awesome story, right? So I'll tell you, this was Saster 2019, February, where we knew that this is it. This is what we want to build. This is our first version. And we had not booked a booth. That year, for the first time, Jason Lemkin opened up a startup table. It was not a booth, it was a table. It was actually a table that he would give at the end of the rooms. At the end of the rooms. He opened up six. By the time the booking happened and there were only three. In the sense, nobody even thought of booking them. So there were only three. What we did was, me and Samir carried, we didn't have a standee, we didn't prepare anything. We had two laptops, two screens, and we had two pitches, same product, but two pitches. One to a salesperson, one to a sales operation person, and just seeing which pitch hits, corrects, right? Luckily, what was supposed to be like the end of the room and the corner of the room, for whatever reason, turned out to be the entrance to the hall. So that's just luck, right? Entrance usually is somewhere else, but they had to move the food there. And it's morning time. Everybody will first come and they're going to grab their cookie or a half a sandwich or a coffee. And they're all coming there. And our booth is right there. End of the day, 37 demos.
Wow.
I have a photo of Samir where he's actually hanging like this. And he's now, his tongue is like slurping because he's tired of speaking. He's just tired of speaking, right? And we knew this is the pitch. This is what we want to build. Let's go. So that's the kind of action we did. Now, that's from an event perspective, because at that time you want full force, right? You want all that. But when we used to come to meetings, we used to take Caltrain. I would get off Palo Alto. Samir would go to SF. We would typically stay at on the Matilda near Mountain View. So we would alternate in the trains. We would have a pass. And we would split between the meetings, except that sometimes there's a leader, right? That, or you have to go to Sandhill Road where there's VCs, in which case it would, both of us would club, we'd go together. But there were so many meetings where we split last minute. There was even a couple of meetings where we had a friend in the US. We just put a jacket to him, put Rev Sales tag, and he would also join us. Because then, there's a crowd now, right? There you can see that, hey, there's a force of people that's coming here. And also because he had a designer bent, so he would take nicer notes than we would. So we do all those things. So 2019 was a lot of really feet on the street activity.
Fantastic. So where did you first start the signups? When did the first actual revenue start coming in? When did you know that, okay, these are the channels which are working, this is the message that is working, and so on?
I tell you, Shubhanjan, I don't think that works like that at all. It basically works by, especially in the mid-market. I'll separate out what we are doing, and sure. I want to come to that point too later, because 2020 is very different, COVID,
yes, totally.
Work from home. I'm missing my visits to Palo Alto because I want to meet those guys, but it's a very different world and we are executing it very differently. But really what we did was, again, putting the lessons there was, we actually had one company in Bangalore testing out our product. So we actually co-developed with them. So we signed a contract with them, great discount. Don't worry about the number of users. We'll take care of it as long as you commit to using it, as long as you commit to giving the feedback. So, and it was a big brand, it was a good name, based out of Bangalore, a very similar kind of an operations that you could map back into US or Europe, anything. So and it was 2 kilometers or a mile and a half, mile from our office. So alternate day, we'd go there, test it out and things like that. So that's number one. So signed a contract, user is already there, you have a token amount. That's number one. Number two, come back to the US. So this, by the way, happened in May itself. This India contract itself happened in May.
2019.
So from basically a year from when we, like me and Samir said, okay, let's start the company, right? So then we put PowerPoints and then December 2018 is when we did our first hires. Feb 2019 is when we made the first pitch. We put even a simple website. And by May, we had one mid-market user. By June, July, we had users in the US and we were signing up the contracts and things like that. So in the mid-market, now the challenge comes is you can't just sign up more users. you got to support and service the users that you have now, because it isn't that you know, while you know the pain point, you're discovering if this is the solution to this pain point, right? Is iPod the right solution? Is Sony Walkman the right solution? Or is Spotify the right solution? You have to figure out that out, right? So we did something with Salesforce, we did something with that. So that took some iteration. But by end of 2019, we had at least half a dozen logos based in US and India signed up with contract, with revenue, and using our product.
And these were how many seats total?
India was 70 seats, 40, about 200 plus seats at mid-market.
Okay.
Mid-market entry, mid-market users, fairly large logos.
Okay. And what was happening in the SMB space at that point of time?
We weren't. No focus on SMB at all.
Okay.
On SMB. Ticket size we were going after was $30,000, $35,000, $200,000 annually.
Okay.
So that was the focus. So in which case, per user pricing, we were flexible because price is a discovery. You have to figure it out.
Yeah.
We were more focused on, is this the solution? Is this the fit? Is this the positioning? Is this the use case? And bunch of integrations, bunch of stitching, bunch of quality, bunch of testing, and then hiring. So a bunch of those things were happening. But yeah, that's where we were.
What were the dissonances you found that the initial, that chat with the 90 guys and whatever you built, and now that when actual users are actually using it and putting money, did you find any difference in what you learned and what you executed?
Yes. There's a lot of them. There is this, multiple lessons, I'll share it with you. Number one is be very, very sharp in positioning. So our earlier positioning, when we were talking with sales operations and we were solving their problem, we were still talking about, here are a bunch of things that you can do. But we weren't telling that, hey, sales ops guy, this is the problem you'll solve. Because the sales ops would say, hey, you know what, when I send a contract for approval, the legal guy has to say yes. The finance guy has to say yes. So then we went to them, hey, legal guy, here's a pitch. You can use it for legal also. And the legal guy said, you know what, I have to talk to the finance guy. And those are bad, wrong things. That is, although you do want to sell to one user, the product, the use case, everything has to be very, very sharply focused on that one. That is, your positioning has to be very sharp and very clear on that job to be done or that persona that you're solving, number one. Number two lesson we learned was group sale. We literally were in a meeting where two of our influencers or the ones who make a call, were in the call, are excited, and then they get one more person, and we are like, okay, who is this person? And you say, hey, you know what, he's also going to be the user in this product, so fine, so I'll give him a sign up. No, he will also take a call whether we'll use this or not. And that was the lesson we learned. Is second was group sale. No group sale. Find one buyer, find one sponsor, and go after that. So that's just the nature of mid-market sales or enterprise sale. You don't sell it to the world. You sell it to like one person who has an influence over team. That was second. And third, in terms of just the product experience itself, is we initially went with we weren't focused on SaaS. We were largely focused on, hey, operations is very hard for companies which actually sell hardware, which actually sell devices, which actually sell various things, because there's a lot of complexities there. There, the challenge happened was the product became just too the potential product would have become way too complex. Integrations here, integrations there, quality this, verification this, and that. And that's the lesson that learned was, there are two lessons learned. A, the problem is real. The opportunity is real. But that's not how you attack it. You still go find the lowest hanging fruit out there who has just enough that problem, and that if we enter there, we can explode it. And that was the learning. So we further narrowed the scope of the product. We'll just do this. That is, you have a CRM, Salesforce, here's the product, that's it. We will not do it. Our initial version was to be built on top of Salesforce. We moved it out. That's the other learning is, you want to work on a third-party platform, then you have to either absorb the system of the third-party platform, or if you, which is, it has its own benefits. It has an ecosystem, but it doesn't give you speed. There is no speed there because it's a ecosystem that has to be taken on. Whereas you want to be independent, you want to be flexible, you want to be nimble, you want to be fast. Then you build to your own. You have control of your experience. Nobody is telling you any brand guidelines, any usage guidelines, design guidelines, any quality requirements. You are the master of your destiny and go off that. Both has its plus and minuses. Both has its plus. It's just that what's the pace that you want to, you take that call. And we took the latter call, which is, hey, we want to control our destiny. So we built the product on our independent platform, own experience, and ran with it. So yes, in those 6 months, dramatic changes happened.
Wonderful. So where are you at in terms of number of users and revenue today?
So in December, when by the time we simplified the product, by that time, there was enough data, enough understanding that, hey, this is a real problem. This is a real opportunity. And to go after this, we need more funding. The wider audience lesson learned is $1 million for a B2B doesn't cut it anymore. That's just not the number. Salaries are high. Operations costs, tech costs, and also PMFIT takes time.
Yeah.
You do not want to be squeezed. You don't want to be running against time to really figure out market. So you want some. So by end of 2019, we went back to the market with here's the use cases, here's the usage, here's the fit, here's the real conversations that our customers saying, I like this, I don't like this, I'm using this, I'm paying for this. And we raised another round, Series A. So this time we closed $4.5 million.
Okay.
So that's where we are. One thing we did with along with that money was now that the use case was very clear, that is, we didn't call it document management, so we were still calling it sales operations, but it seemed very clear that here are the 4 or 5 jobs to be done that we're focusing on. Looks like we can re-message this, reposition this to a much broader market, to a much, much broader market. So December, we put our heads down. Jan, we worked through this. Jan 2020, we worked through this. By the way, COVID was not happened. Nothing was happened. Nothing of that. So from about 10 logos in December, we went to February with about 50 to 70 logos. We ended the May with 1,200 logos. So that's how we are. Just by simplifying the use case, by putting it online, hey, you know what? Here's the use case we're solving. Try it. And if you like it, call us. We'll charge you. And that has just exploded in terms of the usage, use case, and things like that. In terms of revenue, along with this, things also change. Mid-market had its own revenue, had its own focus. But when you want to do a product-led SMB, usage becomes primary, word of mouth becomes primary, a horizontal use case becomes primary, and that continues to be the focus. We are at a point where we are fairly happy with the way the product is shaping, the usage is happening, we are well capitalized, and the focus continues to be right now doing on the product-led. There's revenue now coming in, but I think some of those plans changed in March, when everything went belly up. So not that it killed us, we survived, and for a lack of a better word, thankfully it has only helped us, but a lot of plans changed when it comes to revenue starting March.
So just to sum up what you said, that you started off the most of the activities in 2019 was focused on the MSMEs, mid-market. But by early this year, you had a renewed look at SMBs, and that's where your growth came from.
Mid-market is not MSMEs. Mid-market in the US is largely you are anywhere at a $10 million revenue to $500 million revenue. So your employee size could be anywhere from 50 to 500 to 1,000. So it's actually a big size company where the sales motions are pretty much like enterprise. It's just that there are less people to decide things and the pricing is different. Where we now come down to is we focusing on team size individuals and team sizes anywhere from 10 to 100. Right. So once we did that is when things started changing. So the question is, when we went online when I mean by that is when we repositioned ourselves in February this year, then why focus on US? What stops somebody from South Africa? What stops somebody from Australia? What stops somebody from France, UK to find our product and start using it? What stops them? Where we have to be very clear is, hey, if you have a regulatory requirement in a country, then we say that we don't support that. If you have a language requirement in some country, we say we don't that. So, but when you do very simple conversations like we are a Google Doc for your business documents with a Canva kind of an experience, people relate to that. Anybody can relate to that. And that's where the number of signups has just exploded.
And what channel is bringing this in for you now?
We are purely online, inbound, Google Ads, blogs, inorganic, marketplaces like G2, and then emails, LinkedIn and emails.
So can you just break it up for me in the sense that for example, when you say Google Ads, it's, you know, pay-per-click kind of campaigns that you're running, right?
Yes.
Kind of campaigns are these? And are these like alternate two kind of campaigns, or is it use case based campaigns? What is actually resonating?
You're absolute. That's a very valid point. Very valid point. So the way you start with is alternate two, because people are looking for DocuSign. You say, hey, you know what? You're looking for DocuSign. Why don't you try us? People are looking for Google Docs. For this particular use case, then folks could be looking for any other use case, Conga or any of the document. Hey, so that's how you start with, because you know that these users are definitely looking for something very specific. What you're talking about, what we are now evolving to is largely jobs to be done. How do I send a proposal out? How do I e-sign a document? Those things we are attacking through content. So we are producing a lot of YouTubes. We are producing a lot of blogs. There's a lot of content that's going to come out now going forward, wherein specific use cases are coming. Hey, you're a freelancer. How can I help you? There's a lot of home improvement happening right now because a lot of people are at home. And there's a lot of home buying happening right now. Folks, how can we help you? And then there is a lot of documentation that's happening for businesses because they're trying to raise a loan or SBA, PPP or any of those things. How can we help? Right. So the entire tone has changed in this last 3 months. That is, we are here. How can we help you specifically for these things? And that's how largely this comes. That's one. Second is marketplaces are great. Software Advice, Captera, G2, where there are specific categories defined. And smart users like yourselves who know what they're looking for actually don't go to Google. They'll actually go to marketplaces. Say, you know what? I'm interested in top three in this category, and I'm going to call all the three, and I'm going to bid more of an informal kind of a question, and then figure out what it is. And that happens a lot. So that's the new thing. So just like there's a Gartner or one of those up there, there's a lot of those marketplaces happening for small businesses right now. So those are largely the two dominant channels that we have.
Okay. And how is the content thing? So if you want to break it up, what is the breakup between marketplaces, PPCs, campaigns, and your inbound?
So all of it is definitely inbound. I mean, we are 100% inbound now. That's one. I would say organic is working a lot more, just because we focus on the content a lot more. Then comes the marketplace, and then comes the PPC. We really haven't, while we are well capitalized and we can go aggressive in terms of PPC, it's not something that we wanted to bake into the culture itself. That is, throw money, generate leads. We wanted to be is, are we able to figure out word of mouth? Are we able to figure out the right kind of content? And there's always time to compete in all ways that you want to compete. And if it means buy ads, because even Pepsi has to spend on ads, right? Everybody has to spend on ads. So we will also spend on ads. But just being mindful of, are these leads coming because we spent money on ads versus are these leads coming because they connected to something that we are saying out there. And that's the thing that we are.
Sure. And do you have any sense of what is your current cost of acquisition of customers?
Oh, at this point right now, it's just too early days, Shubhanjan. I mean, that kind of a format. I mean, we have a sense of what it costs today. But I mean, how do I put anything for organic? G2 is free. I mean, how do I say anything for what's coming there, right? Whereas PPC, you have to. It's a necessary evil, right?
Yeah.
You have to have a business office. You have to spend on business cards. And then that cost gets added up there. Sometimes some stupid words leak in there and they cost us. Sometimes it doesn't. And those are, so as they say, right, 50% of my ads work. I just don't know which 50%.
Yeah.
Right? That
yeah.
kind of a thing also happens. So,
totally.
But we are very conscious of what it costs to that. That is, when we built a business model for mid-market, we knew what would it cost to acquire a customer like this. And when we are doing product-led, we are aware of what would it cost. But I think I'll tell you one thing that is very different now with product-led is, product-led in the sense is not Google or Facebook, well, where we take your private data. That's not the case. I'm just saying is valuable product usage, which basically leads to a network effect and valuable, has a lot of upselling that's there. You come for document management system, we can upsell you workflows and approvals. You come from workflows and approvals, we can sell you e-signatures. You come from for e-signatures, and we can then sell you customer service or customer success-based integrations or dashboards and things like that, right? So product-led has a lot of tiering that you can do. So it's why you would see a lot of businesses trying that, right? From Notion to Airtable to all of those trying there, because on the face of it, it seems freemium, but it's actually a fairly robust business model on the back end.
Would you have any sense of what is your, where the price discovery has settled in terms of per seat cost?
So I'll tell you the most amazing thing is, because I worked in Freshdesk, Freshworks, Zoho, and I know what their customers were paying per month kind of a thing. Our customers are today signing up for annual contract, $5,000 to $10,000, right? So at annual contract, $5,000, $10,000, and then many of them, in that way, versus sub $1,000 inbound. I have seen that, right? So we are a 5x kind of a difference than a lot of inbound that we know of.
But still inbound.
Yes. I think that's the effort that we put in customer discovery and development. That is, if the problem is real, people pay me.
Right.
If the problem is, and then it's important, right? Customer support is a real problem. It's a real problem. But the thing that happens is, for a lot of businesses, it's a website. Whether I use the website or not, it's a business card. I'll print it. Versus quotes, proposals, contracts. You can't run a business without that. You have to sign something. Somebody has to sign something. Else nothing moves, right? And that's revenue line products. There are very few revenue line products because you can't get in, right? CRMs get in. Sales enablement get in. They are the harder part. But if you get in, then you're part of the revenue. Then you're important, right? So then really at that point, price doesn't become the problem at all.
Fair enough. So where do you see 2020? I mean, you started 2020 with a slate. Where do you see this going?
I think I'll break down into three phases. 2020 was world is all upside down. Survive. Be safe. Survive. And week by week, figure out if you are any more a viable business at all, right? I mean, one of the things that hard things that we learned out of customer discovery, customer development is a pain point versus a vitamin, right? It has to be a pain point. And when things are good, a lot of things can seem like pain point, right? Going to office was a pain point. But that's gone, right? That's gone. It's now not even a vitamin. You offer me a Mercedes to go to office, I'll not even take that right now, right?
Exactly.
So the entire space of pain point has just narrowed down. So first 1 month, me and Samir were like, are we a viable thing anymore at all? Luckily, fortunately, we discovered that wasn't the case. Because you are a revenue line, if there are businesses that will survive and that will thrive, they will need this. Those who will bounce back some point in time later, we are here for them. Right? That's number one. So that's what the first quarter of the 2020 happened. Second quarter of 2020 was get the engine running, get the inbound, sales, product, data, everything. So now if you ask me what's the usage happening in the product, which positioning worked, who in the team is able to answer this one, what kind of a customer flow is, what they came for, not today, but can I answer customer acquisition cost 6 months from now? Not today, can I answer LTV early next year? Right? Some of those things, so those are in place. Our next goal immediately would be, because it's product-led, to bring in things in there wherein folks promote it. That, hey, I like this product, I'll suggest it to others. So largely growth so engagement and growth is going to be the focus for the next year, for this continuous year. Revenue always has to be there. We are a B2B company. We are not a B2C company where someday revenue will come. Whereas for us, revenue has to come today. So that's always the case. We're just being aware that what does it mean by revenue numbers in 2020. So that's all. But revenue is there. Engagement, you say engagement, promotion, and revenue are the three core focus for this year.
And what are you looking at March 2021? What do you think will be a reasonable place to be in terms of revenue?
I'll put it this way: I think March 2020, in whatever category we show up in the marketplaces, we need to be in the top three or the top five. That's number one, because without that, we are no one, right? That is, people are using it, people are talking about it, they're liking it, and they're promoting it. That's number one for us. Number two is there is a price discovery that has settled, and then we are saying, hey, you know what? This is the value we are offering, and this is what it costs. With that, I think we should be a couple of $1 million by next year. But again, as I said, we want to be much more aggressive in that way. But I think the opportunity right now, the way we are seeing, is what companies like Zoom or Slack are doing is acquire a user right now. That's more important. Help them, which is more critical. They survive, they thrive, you'll grow along with them. So that's the more important thing right now. And it's not us. The entire SaaS is doing that. So I think March 2020 really needs to be category winner, category creation, engaged users, and strong promotion, word of mouth by the users. Revenue is there. We are not running away from it. But I think in the long term, this would help than targeting a number plus minus.
Fair enough. Okay, that's a great note to end this chat, unless you have some things that you want to talk about.
I think now is the time where if companies, startups like ours or whoever are coming in the space like our SaaS, cross-border or a global product like us, if they can somehow manage to take a year or two to build a core product with a core time, like a value offering, and build up a network of engaged users, end of year, end of 2 years, they'll be a lot more valuable company than really just focusing on the traditional metrics. Now, I mean, I'm saying is, revenue will always be a metric, profitability always be a metric, CAC and ATV will always be a metric. But in times like this, when everything is going online, everybody's online, there are so many use cases that are coming up, or there are so many use cases which are now 10x more valuable, it's more important to really, really be in the middle of those use cases right now than really slowing you down. So I'm saying is, if there are some metrics which are slowing you down, don't go after those metrics right now. Go after metrics which are making you run fast. User acquisition, user engagement, deeper data inside the product, much more valuable features, right? The breadth in your footprint, right? Be on more marketplaces. So be with more influencers. Be with more integrations. You can do that now. You should be doing that now, because now is really the point where market is there. The other pointing to the thing that's pointing to this is, in hunky dory days, every good business which is extremely well funded would play itself in at least 10 more ideas, dabble in 10 more ideas. With the conditions now, they are also focusing on very few things, right? Slack would do that only one thing that they're doing instead of the 10 other things they were doing. So for new players like us, it's a great opportunity to now focus and double down on the use case, right? So I would say focus on the metrics that will run, let you run fast, than slowing, focusing on the metrics that will go make you cautious and slow you down.
Wonderful.
SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink enables high-quality interactions between buyers and sellers through presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create personalized sales presentations and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversation. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 990-216-3132. That is 990-216-3132.
Thank you, Rishi. I really enjoyed chatting with you. And I'm sure sometime later this year or early next year, we'll get into another chat and see how this is going.
We will. Thanks for this conversation, Shubhanshin.
Thank you.
Coming up in the next episode is another in-depth and data-rich conversation with Shruti Kapoor, CEO and founder of Wingman.
Wingman is a software for salespeople that analyzes sales calls. Even though people record sales calls today, they don't have the time and energy to go back and listen to every call. And two, there is a lot of value, not just for sales teams, but also for product and marketing and general management to understand what customers are saying in sales calls. So that's how we started out. And what we realized during the conversations was managers actually were interested in using those insights for training salespeople. Through that process, what we realized was that, okay, everybody is interested in these insights to help coach their team and make it better. But 6 months after, you know, we deployed the product with different customers, we realized people were not actually using it for coaching. And we went back and asked them, hey, what happened? You know, like, we don't see any improvement. And they said, like, honestly, we don't have the time. Like, we think we will do this. It's something that we want to do because we know that's the right thing to do. But we don't land up doing it as often. And so what we decided was that maybe we wanted to build a way to remind them when they are making that mistake that they should be doing this or not doing it. So what the product evolved into was to not just have an analytics piece, but also a real-time feedback mechanism.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations featuring Jagat Iyer, founder Witphone, Ravi Trivedi, founder Push Engage, and many more. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today and listening to this episode of SaaS Stories. This is where I speak with the dreamers and visionaries who dared to think ahead and built world-class SaaS products. We hope this conversation helped you with the insights that you can go and apply right now to your own SaaS journey. We hope to have you here with us again in the next episode of SaaS Stories. SaaS Stories is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. SaaS Insider, the definitive community for global SaaS, and is a BizCast original production.